This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Abdullah, assalamu alaikum.
How are you?
How's it going, man?
Alhamdulillah.
MashaAllah. I gotta tell you this question I got this week. So awesome. Guy comes up to me and he says, why can't Allah guarantee me a perfect life, a happy life? If he's in control of everything, why does he have to give me a hard life?
Wow, that's
right. Great. So I was like, wow. And you know, this was piling on my head because I talked to another young man recently, and I was asking him about religion. He wasn't even Muslim. And he said, you know, when I was raised, I was raised in a pretty religious family until I got to college. And then I stopped kind of practicing religion. I was like, so why'd you stop practicing religion? He goes, well, I look at all these other different religions, but I don't really subscribe to any one of them. And the reason for that was when I got to college, I realized, man, I'm stressed out about an exam and I'm praying and I'm praying and I'm praying, but I'm not doing better on my tests. So I should have not been wasting my time praying. I should have been spending my time studying for the test instead. So I realized that I don't need religion. I don't need God. I just need to do the right thing and that's it. Right, so I've just become more, you know, rational about it, and you know, I don't think I need religion in my life. And a lot of people feel that way, right? Yeah. And people who are on the verge of heading in that direction say things like, you know, and he says, when I used to have problems in my life, I used to say, "Why are you doing this to me, God? I pray to you so much. I pray every single day. I ask for this. I do that. I give charity. I, you know, all these rituals." And for Muslims, it could be 5 times prayer. For a Hindu, it could be going to the temple or something else, right? So I do my part. Why aren't you doing your part? You have the power to change everything in my life. Why am I still having a hard time? Right? So it's this idea of this exchange. I gave you. Why aren't you giving me? This is not a good deal. Which is similar to this guy who says, Allah is in control of everything. Why can't he give me a perfect life, right? The problem with this, like, fundamentally from an Islamic perspective, because I can't answer that from other religious perspectives, is that in Islam, our fundamental relationship with Allah is Rabb and Abd. And Rabb is master, and Abd is slave, right? Now, the thing about a master is you don't negotiate with a master. You negotiate with an employer. You can also negotiate with a partner, like a business partner. You can negotiate with a family member. Hey, I'm going to come home at this time. No, come at that time. Okay, fine, no problem. There's negotiations. But when you have a master and a slave, who dictates all the terms?
Master.
The master does. And the slave's only position is to follow all those terms. Now, the other thing about a master is that if he gives you something, it's a bonus. And if he doesn't give you something, he didn't have to. Because you're not salaried. You're a slave. Slaves aren't salaried. Right? And usually when you think of masters, they're oppressive and they're... You know, you think of chains and, like, you know, beatings and things like that. But that's human masters. Allah is a different kind of master, right? And this is the only kind of master. Like Fatiha tells us, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Fatiha itself tells us, this is the kind of master that before you even know that he's your master, you know that he deserves praise and gratitude. Like no other master deserves praise and gratitude right off the bat. The first thing you think of a master is something, someone you should praise and someone you should be grateful for. The only thing a slave would think is, when can I get free of this guy, you know? But for Allah, all you have is praise and gratitude. Now, coming back to this idea of, why isn't Allah giving me a perfect life? The question assumes that Allah owes you something. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, your employer owes you something.
Paycheck.
Your business partner owes you something. You're cut. Your parents owe you something. They're responsible to raise you. Your children owe you something. Your wife or your husband, they owe you something. Allah owes you nothing. He doesn't owe you anything. As a matter of fact, you owe him every breath. So when you phrase this question, I should have a perfect life, you've already kind of undercut the idea that Allah is your master. You're in some sort of position to make demands. Right? And when you take that away, it's an uncomfortable thing. I want God to be my friend. I want Him to be someone who helps me, like I pray to Him. You know, you want to dictate what these relationships, what this relationship should look like. You know, like any relationship, friendships, there are different kinds of friendships, right? So, and some friends I have, the way I talk to them is not the way I talk to some other friends.
Yep.
It's different. So in every relationship, you kind of figure out what's going to be the give and take. So some people figure they should figure out what their relationship with God is going to be like.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to figure out, well, I'm going to do this for him, he better do this for me, etc. Right? The give and take.
It's pretty one-sided.
It is. But the bigger problem with it is you're deciding what the terms are. Mm-hmm. Now, to put it in perspective, who should decide what the terms are between you and the supreme being?
probably the one that knows everything.
The one who knows everything. So his terms override yours. Hmm. Like, what you have in mind is less relevant. What he dictates is far more relevant. Hmm. Now, when I say that, it sounds harsh. But when you give his terms a chance, now this is the last part, right? If you actually study Revelation, study Quran. Quran is his terms. Here's what it means to be my slave. Isn't it? When you study Quran, you find it's not a book of rules. It's not a book of do this, or if you don't do this, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Actually, very few rules. For the most part, it's a relationship of loyalty, gratitude, love, friendship, remembrance, longing. Like, it's a really beautiful relationship. This master wants me to be a slave who loves him, who's friends with him, who talks to him all the time, remembers him all the time. He says, "Fadkuruni adkurkum." Remember me, I'll remember you. Mm. Like, who talks like that? Like, that doesn't sound like a master, right? Yeah. So the Quran shatters your view of what does Allah mean as he's a master. Mm-hmm. He wants to be your friend. He wants you to be his friend, but first understand that he's your master. Then understand he's your friend. He wants to be a giver of gifts to you. But before he gives gifts to you, he wants you to understand he's your master and you're the slave. And he also wants to give gifts to you. He wants to show you love. He wants to show you mercy. He wants to give you forgiveness. He wants to give you all this stuff. He wants to give you guidance. He wants to give you wisdom. He wants to give you knowledge. He wants to teach you. He wants to be your teacher too. He wants all of these things, these relationships with you. It's not one relationship. It's lots of relationships. But at the helm of them all, he's master. And you're a slave. Which means no matter what happens in this relationship, your humility should never go away. Because the idea of slavery is, it's the most humble job description in existence. Yeah. There is no more humble a job than slave. Yeah. You can't get lower than that. If these questions, they lack humility. Because they smell of, they reek of entitlement. Mm. Like, I want. You could still want. But if you want as a slave, is different than when you want as someone who's entitled. Mm. Right?
Yep.
Allah's not saying you can't ask. You can. But that's, he will decide when to give and what to give. Yeah. You know?
He knows best.
So, you know, the answer to this question isn't actually in what Allah decides to or not to do, but actually how we perceive Allah ourselves. It's our perception where the problem lies. Mm-hmm. And once you get that, the problem is solved. You know, at the end of the day, this is probably one of the most fascinating things I ever learned about the people around the Prophet ﷺ who didn't believe. The Quraysh. If you were to ask them who made the skies and the earth, they would say Allah. It's in the Quran. وَلَا إِنْ سَأَلْتَهُمْ مَنْ خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ لَيَقُولُنَ اللَّهِ. If you were to ask them who created the skies and the earth, they'll just say Allah. And I'm like, they have no problem accepting Allah?
So then what's the problem?
Ah, but they have no problem accepting Allah as the creator.
Oh.
He made it, fine. Good, he made it. But if you were to ask them, رَبُّ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ, ask them who the master is, there's silence.
Because that requires submission.
That requires that I have to be a slave. Because if I call him master, that makes me slave. That makes me humble. Like if I ask you, who do you think made this car? And you say, Lexus did, or, you know, Jaguar did, or somebody did. Fine, I can accept that. They made it. Who is your boss? Who is your ultimate authority? Well, let's take a step back here a second. Hold on a second.
You know? My car.
That's my car. Yeah. So that's the line that has to be crossed when somebody enters into Islam. They have to actually accept not only Allah as Rabb, as master, they also have to accept themselves as slave. I'll see you next time, inshallah. Mahangad again. Assalamu alaikum.